And I'm recording. Glad you're here. This is the November 4th Aries Working Group B call. Have a cool agenda today. Before we get there, we ask you to please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct, the antitrust policy. The link for the agenda is in the chat in case you would like to add or correct anything or add yourself to the list of attendees is also helpful. Anyone new here today that has not attended before that would like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, hey guys, this is Dmitry, and I am a new one here. I'm the guy who is now implementing BBS Plus support in Aries Framework Go. So Dmitry, nice to meet you guys.
Thank you for coming and glad to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sam.
Hi, I don't join often, but I guess I did join before. This is Baha from SecureKey. I work on the Aries Framework Go. I'm more interested in the crypto and the KMS side from the Aries Framework Go.
Fantastic. Thank you and welcome. Thank you for coming and welcome.
Thank you.
Are there any announcements that we ought to be sharing? I'm unaware of any. Okay. Let's dive into related meeting review. This is the week, I believe, for the identity implementers call. Is that the case, Steve?
Yes, that's correct. That would be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. And like always, we'll go over some of the proceedings of the various other working groups, kind of give summaries of those. And then Paul Knowles from the, he'll be coming to give a presentation on the overlays data capture architecture and as well as a demonstration. So that should be really exciting. He always gives a really good presentation. So there's the link right there, which has all the Zoom information.
He also has a remarkably better accent than I do. So if you find me my accent wanting, then Paul's your guy. The DIDCOM working group meeting this Monday, we had an issue-a-thon and managed to close a lot of old issues that had already been addressed in the spec work, which is good. And so work is ongoing there. Other calls that we want to detail?
Hey, Sam. We started the indie DID method calls this week. We're going to have them weekly from now, starting the hour before the Indie Contributors call, so 7 Pacific. First call this week talked about how to do the network naming and dove into a bunch of conversations around that.
Awesome. Do you have a link to where they can find the
call? Yeah, I'll add that. I'm scrambling to get a bunch of things. I've been on call since 4 a.m. today, so I'm a bit scrambling right now.
I hear that. I also, man, we both had bad luck. It was not the same 4 a.m. call, but I was on a 4 a.m. call too. What's with that?
Yeah.
Cool. That's there when you get it.
Yeah.
Any other calls? All right, let's run into work updates. Keith, any updates on the Aries Protocol Test Suite?
We are starting, as I mentioned, this regular Friday meetings that we're having to do sort of manual testing in addition to, you know, the work with Aries Protocol Test Suite. And we're starting with Canis folks have joined us. We have a group of about 7 different vendors that we're working together. Canis, who's based on Aries Framework Go, So we'll start interoperating, doing interoperability testing with, this will be the first one based on Aries Framework Go. So it'll be a good thing. Just thought I'd mention it.
Yes, thank you.
And again, anyone else is welcome to join this. So.
Fantastic, thank you, Keith. Stephen, since you're busy writing stuff down, We have the list of things from the BC Gov team. Aries Agent Test Harness.
Yeah, so we're adding a CI pipeline so that the plan right now is daily execution of a set of tests, pulling both released agents and latest code. So there'll be basically a series of runs that will happen on a daily basis. We're doing the runs in the Test Harness repo as opposed to the adding the CI/CD to the underlying projects themselves. So that allows us to just pull whatever is the latest on those, test out dependencies and things like that. As well, we're adding the visualization of the results. So we're getting a tool that processes behave output and gives a nice set of visuals on what tests are passing, what tests are failing, and so on. So, and what tests are skipped. So there's, anyway, that's what we're working on.
Awesome, very cool. I saw you adding the Aries Secure Storage Initiative stuff down here in the Aries Shared section.
Yeah, I was trying to get the link to the repo and I'll put that in. Andrew should have an Akamai version. That's his goal right now, perhaps end of the week or early next, to have an Akamai that is running with all of these things and no indie SDK. So that's kind of the goal.
Awesome. Super excited about that work. And that'll be fun to talk about it here when he gets there. Cloud Agent Python.
Yeah, the big thing that's going on right now, in addition to the underlying pieces, the Rust underlying pieces between Indy and Aries, is work on multi-tenant agent. This has expanded to include SICPA, and they also have brought in Animo. I don't know if Timo is on the call, but Timo and team are working on this multi-tenant agent with Ian as well. In Costanza. So we're gonna, on the next ACAPUG meeting, which is next Wednesday, immediately before this one, we'll be talking about the multi-tenant agent implementation and the planned work that's now underway actually to get that happening. So that's what's going on there.
Very cool. Aries Framework Go.
Well, yeah, so Troy's not here, but status is pretty much the same. There's been a lot of focus on two fronts or three fronts, just like it says there, the BBS Plus verifiable credentials using Pure Go, which has been implemented by Dima, which you'll talk a little bit about later, Dimitri. And then we have another team member working on adding support for DIFS EDV, which is part of the secure data storage spec. That'll be a first class citizen in the framework, and it's going to be the default remote storage out of the box solution for the framework. And then we're still like filling out the new extensions repo with the link for which you can see right there with quite a few components. We've already received contributions from Canis, Philip Fairheller, I think it's his last name. And many thanks to those folks for their contributions.
Indeed, and excellent to hear. Contributions are always, always excellent. Okay, we have a little bit of a smaller group today. Any other projects that we want to highlight? All right. On our agenda today, we will start with the Aries Framework Go folks, as mentioned previously, are here to talk about BBS Plus and Aries Framework Go and what they did to add it. And that's pretty awesome. BBS Plus is a highly sought as a cross-community form of credential. As it's growing and gaining abilities. So we're excited to hear from them. And then we have some an issue and some other discussion following that, but we'll get to that in a minute. Any adjustments made and needed to the agenda before we get going? All right. Let me stop sharing and turn over to the Go folks.
So Dimitri, do you have anything to share? Maybe you can walk us through on. Okay, great.
Yeah, I can share at least repositories we have, and just let's start from this. So hi guys, so it's not much experience in presenting things to such a powerful community, so thank you for this honor. And let's start from a region. So what's the region of it? So we have a BBS Plus implementation in Rust in libursa. So this is the thing which we consider as a reference implementation. This implementation is mostly written by Mike Loder. And fortunately, we found him on our Hyperledger chat, and we can now ask him questions, because some things which we don't understand, we learn, and it's actually quite complicated topic. So we have a Rust library which allows us to define how we can generate key pairs using BLS 12.3.8.1 pair friendly curve. Then we are able to actually do a few things we used to. So we can sign messages, and we can then verify signature. What interesting we can do here as well. So we can make a great aggregated signature. So this is one of particular cases which is used for Lint data proofs for verifiable credentials. Our main goal is to have n messages and use one private key to build a single signature, which size doesn't depend on a number of input images. So no matter one or n or five or 10, we'll have the same size of signature. So who is actually created first implementation of linked data proof of verifiable credentials, which is our main goal? So it's a company called Matter Global, and they have created a number of repositories for this. So first one is implementation of BBS Plus signature schema in Rust in Ursa, and Matter Global they created so first package is actually a native wrapper in JavaScript of BBS Ursa library. So this one is Matter Global node BBS signatures, and here's some description. Actually, it makes a little changes, for example, to the way how key pairs are generated. So we can use different hash functions for these, but main algorithms, they are the same. They live in libursa. So just to give you a feeling what we have for what are the sizes. So private keys takes 32 bytes, public keys 96 bytes, and signature is the same again, 112. Proof is another thing. I will talk about it a bit later. So this is a JavaScript wrapper which is then used by Matter to firstly to create a library called BLS12381 KeyPair to generate key pairs. So there are two possibilities to generate private key in G1 space and public key in J2 space, or vice versa. So I won't go into much technical details about this, but yeah, it allows both ways. And after this, we have a top level library, which called JSON-LD signatures BBS, which we can apply to verifiable credential. So let's see what we have here. Okay, so this is actually a verifiable credential with BBS BLS signature 1212. So this is a type of JSON of linked data proof. And this is a proof value, its size is...
I assume that type is registered in the LD, I forgot, in that registry of the W3C.
Yeah. It's already there. Yeah. It's already there. We have a spec which describes this. It's also written by guys from Matter and also Mike Loader. So Mike Loader actually not only wrote this BBS create, but he also contributed to writing wrappers for JavaScript. So yeah, he's main guy in this area. Yeah, and regarding registries, I did not open this linked proof registry. Yeah, okay, we can just open this, I believe. Yeah. Okay, so here we go. So this is BBS BLS signature 1212. And we have another type, signature proof. So this one is corresponds to signature we used to, like normal elliptic curve of signatures. Yeah. And this one is corresponds to selective disclosure. So this is a piece of cake we get with using of BBS plus. Also keys. So this is a type G1 or G2. In what area? Yeah.
Dima, can you like at a high level walk us through how we the work that was required for us to implement this in Go? Because as you very well explained, the reference implementation is in Rust. And what did we have to do in Go to make this work, basically? At a high level.
Yeah, at high level. So first thing is that we need BBS plus is just a conjunction of BBS and BLS specification, which defines how to create signatures, private public keys, all these security schema definitions using any pair friendly elliptic curves, which actually allow, for example, selective disclosure or aggregation of signatures. And BBS plus defines how it can be done with using of particular elliptic pair friendly elliptic curve called BBS 12381. So this one is very important, and it also defines several more things which are defined in quite abstract way in specification. So this is also described in scientific articles. So this is the main point if anyone wants to know what is based on, so all mathematics. And this article is referenced in BBS Crate. So anyone interested can quickly find this article. So what we have in Go? What do we have anything ready? So answer is yes and no, because we don't know, we don't have BBS Plus implementation, but we have support of BLS 12.381 curve. So this is a main library. This library is used, for example, for Ethereum. So this library is quite well known, and also Mike Loder also recommended to use this library. So this is a thing which we based on. So there's a definition of different operations we need to do to calculate private keys and make signature verification, etc. But what it lacks? So it lacks, for example, definition of private keys, public keys, signatures, creating of signatures, verifications, and other things. So it's just operation on elliptic curve and check that it's very important that points in elliptic curve space, they are on curve. So this is needed for when we are checking, when we are verifying signatures. Yeah, so this library is very good. We needed to add or change a few things here. Some of them are still not agreed, but the guy, Kilich, who is also of this library, he is really fast in responses, and we are getting great support from him.
Okay, so basically, is this what some would say a crypto primitive, basically, which basically allows us to sign data using this curve or this algorithm, right?
We need to implement sign operations by ourselves. So it's just curve definitions and different operations on curve, like generate a point on curve and then particular operations which allow
But the framework already does that because of you've implemented this in the framework.
Yes, exactly. Right. Another library which I found useful at the beginning was Hoare Project BLS. So this one it implements the same BLS 12.381, but also it implements BLS in it's not BBS Plus, because BBS Plus has certain specifics and certain custom things which are not defined in BLS. So this one is I treated it firstly as a good reference implementation as well, and just to learn how they're doing signing verifications, blah blah blah. And also we even use this library because we lacked one important type FR. This type, for example, is used to for generated of private keys or generating points from input messages when we want to calculate a signature. So quite important type, and this type was not supported in Kilich, but they've recently added the type support of this type in Kilich library. So we are now going to remove dependency on this library, and we will depend only on Kilich library.
So would you say that the Kilich library basically does the heavy lifting, and how much work did we have to do in the framework versus what's done in the Kilich library?
If you compare lines of code, so probably Kilich is three or four times bigger than what we've implemented.
Okay.
I mean, for BBS Plus, but our work touches not only BBS Plus, but we go up and we want to use it for building link data proofs.
Selective disclosure, yes.
And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So selective disclosure. Yeah. So what we have right now. So
yes.
Now we can build link data proofs as we did, for example, for JSON Web Signature 2020 or
ED259 signature.
Yeah. So just having I assume that this scenario when issues and new verifiable credentials and it attaches link data proof with BBS Plus. So this is a BBS signature which holder keeps in wallet, and this is when it's get used. But we are now need to support in recent future we are going to support the selective disclosure. So selective disclosure, it's mandatory for selective disclosure to have a document with BBS Plus link data proof, just because so what is it selective disclosure? So it's I understand it as this when we as a holder don't want to show all information from our verifiable credential to a verifier. But for now, we don't have a possibility to, for example, to cut some subset of credential fields, like cut some fields from a credential subject and provide it to verify in a verifiable presentation envelope. So this is not possible just because verifier it should check not only signature of verifiable presentation, but signatures of all enclosed verifiable credentials. And it will just check that signature is not correct because we can't amend signature inside link data proof. But yeah, if you delete some fields, we'll get a mismatch of verifiable data. So this is not possible for all existent signatures. Yeah, if you touch credential somehow, change it, then verifier will say you're cheating. So selective disclosure allows us to build a new proof. It's called signature proof. So taking a BBS Plus signature and taking a description of what we want, what fields we want to enclose. So this allows to generate a new signature and verifiers and can verify it and still say that yeah, this changed credential is okay. So that's why we're implementing this selective disclosure. We are getting possibility to edit underlying verifiable credentials, and verifier will manage to verify it successfully.
Yeah, okay, got it. So Aries Framework Go today can produce credentials with the BBS signature proof, right?
And BBS signature proof is selective disclosure. It's what we are gonna implement exactly. This month.
Exactly. Yeah. Next steps during this month is to implement or enable holders to actually selectively disclose claims in their credentials, just like you explained. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's quite complicated algorithm. It it's not only about.
Is the reference implementation for that also URSA, or is it Matter's JavaScript layer?
Yeah, again, it's in conjunction with Matter Global, just because we need to. So this is actually more tricky to define. So how we can define this, like inputs. We have a verifiable credential, and then we should define a way how we can say what to disclose and what not. So this, maybe I can show example. I don't know. Let's see. MapBS signatures, JSON-MD. Okay. Yeah. So this one is example. We say, okay, we have a credential subject and we want to disclose given name, family name, and gender. And you see here that the original verifiable credential has much more fields in credential subject. Yeah, but we want to leave given name and several other fields. So this is a way how we can define our intention regarding selective disclosure. And this is the output. So this is the output. So it's the same credential, but a credential subject is much shorter now. And we have a type change here. It was BBS BLS signature, but now we have another keyword here, edit its signature proof. And proof value is now much bigger just because it's a selective disclosure. So that's the idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I've never seen anything cool like this. Yeah, how we can edit credential and make a selective disclosure. Looking forward to implement this. So besides that, besides supporting of selective disclosure in the form of signature BBS BLS signature proof, now we are working on interoperability tests, just because now we can check this part and compare it with what we have in Matter Global, what is underneath using URSA Rust library. So it's what we wanna do before starting implementing selective disclosure. So generate given some verifiable credential, generate a link data proof, and provide to areas public key, or it can be obtained using some input deed, and then areas framework Go will verify this proof using existing algorithm, and vice versa, generate a verified credential with BBS BLS signature 1212 in areas framework Go, and let's Matter Global library will check for signature. So that's another thing we want to complete quite soon. Yeah, so to conclude, we have three directions now. So first one is to get rid of extra dependency on whole project BLS library, so that we'll have only dependency on this library. Then we are completing with interoperability tests with Matter Global to verify first part of work generation of signatures and verifications, and then we proceed with selective disclosure, and of course we will add more interoperability tests after completeness. I think awesome. That's it. Any questions, guys?
Very cool. Hey, George, have you given any thought on how this is going to get merged into Aries? Into the protocol? Like, what are you planning to use for the attachments? We're starting to think about that a bunch for Akapai and wondering where your thoughts have gone on that.
Not too far beyond the use of DIFF's presentation exchange format for the verifier to specify the requirements and the holder to satisfy the requirements. Not too far beyond that yet.
Have you done much in that? Like in thinking about that? I've been going through that the last day or two, not a lot of time, but a little, and I'm realizing that there's sort of, you know, you sort of, there's a series of steps. For example, you get the PE, the DIFF PE as the holder, and then you have to A, figure out which credentials you're gonna actually use. Then I think the holder would have to construct the LD framing request, because that's a different format again. And then all of the proofs you get back sort of have to be packaged in return in some way. And I'm just wondering whether you've thought about any of those ideas.
No, I have not yet. Okay. But I think I see your point. Like, how does the holder in their response to the verifier match those specific proofs selectively right. disclosed? Yeah. And how can they describe that in their response to the verifier? That's an
interesting question. That's actually one more thing, is once they construct the set of proofs. Because this is basically one per credential, at least one proof per credential, and possibly three. If you go all the way down the path that you know Tobias is talking about, with a domain proof, a non-revocation proof, and then the selective disclosure proof itself. And all of those go back, and then the verifier kind of has to map those onto, okay, what did I ask for in my PE? And how does this satisfy it? So it's very interesting.
So my rough initial thoughts looking at this is that the holder, when they are creating their selective proofs, they're essentially mm-hmm. just verifiable credentials. Yep. And when you wrap yep. those, and so like the holder will produce an N number of verifiable credentials, each with the selectively disclosed proofs, yeah. right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
you'll just use a presentation submission. They use the JSON path as a syntax just to basically identify which credential inside this verifiable presentation corresponds to which of their original requirements. Okay. I don't see an immediate issue. Not quite sure where your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, I've just started to go through and realizing that, you know, I assumed we would go with the PE just like you're thinking, but I'm sort of realizing the disconnect between the PE format, what you've got to do to construct the overall proof. And that proof is in fact multiple proofs if you've got multiple credentials involved. And then, you know, packaging that back and sending it up. There's a number of steps that are not fully connected in my head of how those all flow together, how they become seamless. So, okay.
Yeah, I guess I'm happy to chat about it offline anytime. That's definitely once Dimitri is done with his excellent work yeah. laying down the groundwork and the framework, we will definitely have to focus on that, on this 100%.
Okay. I'm starting to put a document together just to start it off and figure out. We're thinking one of the things we might do in to try to push on this is to do some code bounties. So, you know, BC Gov is considering that, not clear we're going to do it, but what I'm trying to do is sort of lay out, okay, this is what it would take to add BBS Plus to an ARIES implementation. And a lot of it's, you know, we know the protocols, you know, issue credential and verify credential are there, but how does that map into, you know, if the proof request is actually a diff PE, how does that get translated into a series of proofs and then translated back out? So those are some of the things I'm thinking about. Excited to see this stuff going forward. It's really cool.
Oh yeah, we are, thanks to Dimitri again, we are moving ahead pretty fast actually.
Awesome. I really appreciate that, guys. I will pretend that I understood some of the crypto stuff, but the way it integrates into the software and in the interfaces for interoperability is the part that I get really excited about. Not that I don't get excited about the crypto, I just don't understand it as well. But that's very cool. All right. Awesome. Okay, so the next item on our list, and I don't know if the gentleman's here to talk about it, but I want to talk about it anyway, because it was a really cool issue that he brought up that resulted from the chat. This is issue 560, and he's proposing, this is not really in a PR form yet, although it's kind of aiming that direction. And what he's proposing is that we have a way to represent an image of a credential in the user's wallet. And if they are stored and this is standardized, then this is something that can be present and offered everywhere. Currently, without this, it's the wallet's responsibility to provide some sort of visible representation of a credential, often in a card format or something similar. And so anyway, that's what this particular RFC is about, and talking about embedding or attaching an image that could be used for that purpose. One of the thoughts that I have when I do this is, in my own experience with a mobile, you know, payment credit card wallet, is that sometimes when I connect one of my credit cards, it actually presents the wallet or the card. We're using the same visual thing as it actually shows up in my physical wallet, which is kind of a nice touch. And so that could be a thing, although not all of our credentials are going to originate from things that have been in our wallet. It's kind of a nice image and a nice way to put that together. I noticed there was a couple comments on this. Keith or Stephen, any comments on this?
I think it looks good. It certainly makes sense as a way to do it. I mean, just adding a attachment, which means that we don't actually have to change, we don't have to, you know, bump up the protocol version because we're just adding a field. So, right. So we can do a minor update on the two protocols. And, you know, as Keith said, oh, you don't want to send it in the message. And I agree with that. But again, because, the link format of an attachment decorator is just exactly what Keith said, which is you're just attaching a URL plus a hash of the data. So I think it looks really good.
So why would we not do it as just a special attribute, a well-known attribute name?
You mean instead of an attachment?
Instead of a separate set of attachments. I guess, well, number one, I was wondering if we have multiple credentials attachments, how are we going to correlate? Is it by index, like index zero credentials attachment correlates to index zero of credential images attachment?
Oh, in the case of issuing more than one credential at a time?
Yeah, and then second, I'm just not sure why. Yeah. Would there be a problem with designating a special attribute name for the image. I mean, I realize there's the namespace, potential namespace problem, but yeah, I don't know if that's really a problem or not, but.
Following on that point, I'm puzzled by this proposal because it sounds to me like the motivation is for to issue credentials that are images.
No.
But it, literally the opening line says digital credentials are usually presented as images. Well, in the holder's wallet. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not presented as in presentation of a credential, but they're just represented as an image in the holder's wallet.
In other words, like right now, if you look at the Trinzic or the eStatus, they have, you know, formats to make things look like a wallet, but what they want or make it look like you have a credential, but they're not custom to the credential itself. So what you want is something that looks like a driver's license, an image that looks like a driver's license, so you know that credential is a driver's license. That's the idea they're going for, is that the issuer would declare, here's an image to be associated with the credential that I issue. So that if the
And this needs to be transferred in binary form?
Oh, it just needs to be transferred. It doesn't have to be, it can be in any form. You're going to need a mind type, but by doing it as an attachment, you can pass it in as this, or you can pass a URL to it with a hash link on it. You know, basically as a hash link. I mean,
it could also be just a generic one. Meaning, I think you could also just provide a URL that kind of provides you a generic one, rather than maybe one generated specifically for the user.
Oh, absolutely. This isn't intended. Yeah. Well, actually, you can do both with this, obviously.
Right.
But I think the general model is you would just have one for every holder. You would just have one that represents it and it would display it. It wouldn't have the specific data for that user on it.
So are you guys thinking of like some kind of markup language or something? Like
just like a PNG, like an actual image file.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, that would be binary then. As in the credential is literally a binary image, right?
No, not the credential. No, an image that looks like the credential of that type.
Is it a
preview? Eye candy. It's just eye candy.
It's like a preview. It's like a thumbnail, but not really of the actual data, but a sort of a visual indicator of what that credential might be like.
Yeah.
Can I just show something for a minute, Sam? Okay. Actually, just go to the Trinzic.id website, just as a quick. You see where that red blob is there? Those are generic ones. And so they're made to look like credentials, like Trinzic thinks it looks like a credential, but you could actually have an image that the issuer provides that says, oh, this is the state of Arizona driver's license.
Yeah. So you want to use it as an avatar
logo on it, the state of Arizona logo, but this is just eye candy just to make it look like, oh, this is the thing from Arizona that the issuer provides. Does that make sense, George?
Yeah, it does. It's I guess it's a misuse of terms, but it's what I was usually calling a credential preview, with the implied understanding that it doesn't necessarily have to actually hold. It would not show the actual data in the final.
Yeah, the intention is that it not show the actual data.
My concern is related to that confusion in that it doesn't say in here that this should not ever be part of a presentation. But I think there's an important factor there. It's less of an issue, for example, if you happen to know you're getting an Arizona driver's license and it's a link to a generic thing. But if someone decided that they wanted to generate a unique image and have unique bytes for the credential, then presenting that becomes a correlatable identifier of the credential itself.
Exactly. But you got to remember, this would never be presented to a verifier. This is just
Well,
the holders, or this, again, I think the intention is, but maybe it just needs to be clarified, but this would just be displayed in the wallet screen.
Yeah, I'm not worried about what our current intent is. I'm worried what happens two generations along when someone says, hey, we should just send that along, right? So being really clear about the fact that this image should never be involved in a presentation, and it's only to to improve the recognition of the credential on behalf of the user from the issuer is its purpose, right?
Yes.
Like that's the sole role of this thing, and placing clear boundaries around it, I think will help clarify, but also will, provide very flashy warning signs to people that might want to misuse this in the future.
Yep.
Can I ask a potentially dumb question?
There are no dumb questions. Ask away.
Could a issuer, if they use custom data in this image, and that is what gets displayed in the offer to the holder, but then the issuer slips in different data than was represented in the image, is that a problem, if that makes any sense? So
again, the image is not supposed to contain the user specific data. It's just supposed to be an image that can be displayed. Supposed to be.
Well, it doesn't actually say that here in the text.
Okay. And so that would be something to clarify. So that's a good question to clarify.
Yeah, that is a good question to clarify, because we either custom images that actually include maybe like a low res version of your own picture or something, right? Like that would.
It actually says add user specific content to the image, i.e. holder's name. So there you go.
Right. So it does actually say that.
There you go. They're already thinking about that. Okay.
And so what we should do is, I love the idea that it would be in an offer, by the way, because that would smooth over the user experience. But again, we have to address the safeguards around the actual image, et cetera. There's also, I think what you're bringing up, James, is what happens if they actually present an image that differs from the data presented, right?
Yeah, so if that's the case. Another way to do this is to associate this with the... Yeah, I don't know how to do this. In the indie world with cred defs there, you could actually associate it with a credential definition.
You mean the image itself with the cred def?
Like a path to the image there so that you get it associated with the cred def. Mm. But having said that, because I wasn't thinking of including, data about the subject in the image itself. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, I don't think we should build anything based on cred def, since
it doesn't translate across
ecosystems.
Right. So Steve, you asked in the chat, will and can the image contain any type of QR code? I vote no. This is entirely not for presenting it, just as a sort of visual avatar for the user to identify it when they're looking through the credentials in their wallet. So this is not for the purposes of communicating really to anyone else. It stays, it's handed by the issuer and then used for recognition by the holder.
Is there any danger in me as a malicious issuer trying to make my image look like someone else's that would then cause a problem for the holder?
So Keith, right before you said that, my brain went there. let's discuss. That's a really good question. There's nothing to prevent someone else from, I hate to call it phishing because it's not entirely the thing, but.
It's not, I mean, you gotta go a long way down to go fishing this way.
You would, but what's the problem? Let's say Sam just shows up and I issue your credential that happens to look like your driver's license. I mean, it could cause me to select the wrong credential when I'm going to present something, right? If I'm recalling based on image instead of looking at other metadata, what other dangers exist for this?
But it shouldn't match a cred def if the verifier. It shouldn't match the proof request, right? In that case, it
depends how the proof request is constructed, right? not even if it's the same even if it's the same schema, for example, if it was matched on schema, I can always issue my own from the SAM credential factory.
Well, I mean, if you do anything on schema,
absolutely.
Now, in a governance framework situation, that would not, SAM's cred factory is unlikely to be, included as a valid issuer in a governance framework. So maybe that's suitable prevention, and then we don't really need to worry about it. It would be certainly annoying, right? If two images end up being very close to each other, and it's possible that you could warn the user that, like, hey, you've got two that look the same. That there'd be a little bit of algorithmic math there, because I could be devious and change just enough pixels that it's not a perfect match, but would still appear that way to the user. So that's an interesting thing to explore.
I don't think it's a. I just wanted to bring it up. I don't think it's a big issue, but it seems like we have the option of a separate attachment. Versus what about having a special attribute that the issuer, a property on the attribute that the issuer specifies to say this attribute is only for the holder. It may never be presented in a proof to a verifier.
I mean, it can't be presented in a proof because it's not in the credential.
Yeah, but someone could make a protocol modification that included the image to be sent, and that would be a super bad idea, right? We just need to put a barbed wire around that.
Okay.
Right?
I guess I was just trying to think of, if we have it separately, then it's not going to have the same issuance. The security property will be different, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this isn't in a credential. It's not signed.
Yes, it's just sort of a volunteer.
Okay, and I guess that's the connection level protocol that guarantees to the holder that it really is coming from the right person, and it's so the holder can trust it.
I mean, as much as they can trust receiving a credential themselves from the issuer, right? And you, when you think about it, the credential is more valuable than a picture of a credential. So
I don't know that that it affects the trust model, but it's certainly sort of pings up on our radar, right? When we're all thinking about this, because of how it is, right? I do feel good about this, but there are some issues there. One of the other things too is that we'd all like to present a useful interface, right? And UI designers hate things that aren't all consistent. But I'm nervous about specifying the dimensions of an image just because that can lock stuff in an unintended way so that it never improves. So the dimensions of the credential are an interesting thing. It also tends to lock other UIs that may be better, right? Let's say we decide that something rectangular should be used and there's a ratio or that we define or something. And then, the world evolves and it turns out that squares are better, right? Now what do we do with all those stupid rectangular images, right? Are we locked there and we can't improve? So I don't know what the answer there is, how you would handle the image. It's common in a UI framework that you can sort of center the image within the area that it has, but that may not present quite the usefulness that UI designers want to as they're trying to present really useful UIs. So that's something that I'm concerned about, but I have zero answers for.
So stupid question here. Would there be value in having an image provided both by the issuer and a custom image provided by the end user, and then being able to display both or overlaying one on top of the other? An example would be I have three or four Visa cards or some sort of payment method, right? And I want to have a picture indicating what I want to use each one for. So for example, I have one for work and I have one for personal use, but it would still be helpful to overlay the fact that these are payment methods.
I like that. So I was thinking, well, as you were talking, I was thinking maybe about like a colored border could indicate the different usage. I could have orange for some and blue for others. Also maybe some kind of an icon that I might apply there and to hint to myself as a user what should be used. And so it's, you know, I think we tend to go on the user control thing, which means that if the user wants to say, yeah, I don't really like that image, they could just decide to display it however they wanted. Also, I'm looking forward to having so many credentials that are actually useful in my life that I need to categorize them this way.
One thing I'm thinking is on the size issue is maybe we propose a protocol where it links to a place where a set of, I don't know if I'm getting too deep, but a set of assets basically with, you know, pixel size images. This is a 64 by 64.
Like alternatives.
Yeah. So you've got, so the issuer can put alternatives in there and we're not stuck on one. So you're not sending them directly to one image, but you're sending them to a folder of images.
That's a little rabbit holey, but that is a common practice using mobile UI,
et cetera. Then you're giving at least some flexibility.
I know. Let's solve the problem with one more level of abstraction.
Yeah, exactly.
That's perfect.
In a nutshell, this is like when a web page links an icon to the web page that it can show in the top bar.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very fixed thing, though. I mean, that is literally it's got exactly one size. So they do specify those. I mean, if Avicon
they don't, though. You can actually specify different pixel density versions so that folks with higher density screens can use a higher density image in fave icons. It used to be that it was just a thing, and now they've expanded it. You know, as soon as we ended up with really pixel dense screens, HD screens, then the issue sort of showed up. But the same practice is also present in you know, when you're developing a mobile app, you can frequently say, here's an image and provide three or four different versions of it so that the closest one to the user's phone can actually display, you know, a custom created one, so, you know, without requiring the lower phones to downsample, et cetera.
So here's kind of an example of where this is done in industry. If you look at the Authy two-factor app, when you connect to a site, it'll display a small version of the company's logo if they have one. Otherwise, it just puts a default. But then what happens is, let's say I have two Gmail accounts. I'm going to see Google's G logo for each one. And then it differentiates by the account name that I have. But I think it might be worth taking a look at some of these other instances, like whether it's web pages or apps like this or whatever, see how they do it and maybe mimic
how it works. Well, and also deciding how complex we want to get here, right? Also, Steve, would you mind doing a screen share and showing us all of your one-time passwords for a couple of minutes while we talk?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Let me.
Just kidding. Yes. Learning from this is good. This strikes me as a giant trade-off, right? Where we could rabbit hole really deep on figuring this out, or we can try to figure out something that's an improvement that we can do now and perhaps expands to something else later. And I don't know.
So I'm in favor of the idea. I think this is great, and it would be helpful for whoever issues the credential to have some sort of logo or whatever it is, in a 32 by 32 or whatever size it needs to be. I think it's really helpful when we potentially bring a lot of things together. It gives a visual acuity. And, you know, as long as we know how to report or call out a situation where somebody co-opts somebody else's logo, or that the user can change it locally with their own image, that would be helpful too. And that would handle the case of the two Visa cards.
Right. So George, you want to add words to your thought in chat? The credential issue credential thing?
Yeah, I was wondering because I was curious about this. I went back and looked at the proposal and it's scoped squarely at the offer credential message, which is essentially just like right before issuance, this is the issuer just saying this is how your credential looks like in quote unquote, right? But
well, it's also an issue, right? It's an offer and an issue.
Yeah. Where's the issue?
I'm sharing it. Here's offer credential here and here's issue credential down here.
Oh, okay. But then in the issue credential, what is that the image with the actual user data?
It doesn't have to have user data, but it might have a subset of the user data or be generic entirely.
Yeah, so then my question still holds. I was just wondering if the issuer can sort of like nudge or hint the end user's wallet into a preferred display format for the credential.
That makes sense. Will you say more about what you mean by the preferred display format?
Well, I mean, if once the user is already a holder of the credential, now they're browsing through their list of credentials. I'm wondering if issuers may have preferences for how that credential should be displayed, preferably.
Well, that's why the image is presented. Or are you thinking something beyond an image? Mm. Or do I misunderstand what you're saying entirely?
I was thinking more of an image with the actual user data.
Oh, like overlaying the user data from the credential on top of the image?
Well, maybe that could be one form. So that's why I initially thought of like some kind of markup language or something.
Yeah, I mean that is another rabbit hole to go, which is doing basically layout. You've got an image saying, okay, here's where to lay out the actual data. But man, that's
deep.
A rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now the good news is that if we do the image thing and we later decide, you know, UIs can always overlay some of the credential data onto the credential if they would like. You know, with advancements in, I'm thinking of Paul and his excellent accent and overlays type stuff, we may actually be able to use some of that overlay information to figure out how it ought to be displayed in a particular way. But we could always get there later if we start with images now. So it strikes me that we're not precluding that from a future option if we take a minor step this direction.
I know where Paul will be at 9 o'clock Mountain Time tomorrow if you'd like to pose that question to him.
Well, I think I know what the answer is, but we just got to figure how it applies. But I think the right thing now, here's my deal, right? Like, yes, we could do this. Is this the biggest problem facing us? Probably. I like the image idea. I think that's probably worth development effort, but going really deep down this rabbit hole, I'm not sure that the tuning of credential display is my biggest issue right now. Not that everyone's issues are in order with my issues, but.
If you're a wallet creator and you want your customers happy and you like the user experience, that's why this question's coming up. What Mika is doing. One other thought is, you know, your point about Paul and OCA is I think pretty good. I think that is actually a layer where it could fit. I'm just wondering if maybe we should recommend investigating. We're not the first community to see this. See what others do. I'm just wondering if there's like something associated with JSON LD that is tied to this. Like if you have a context and a, does it have any sort of tie into this display of the data? You know, that's certainly overlays, is that's one part of overlays. So is there other work in other, you know, domains that have dealt with this already?
And sort of to add on to that, I would say, I think it could certainly, even if there isn't, this can be made more generic than the current proposal, I think, simply by not using a separate attachment. Then you introduce this correlate, how do you, you know, the thing I mentioned initially about index zero matching index. There are ways of doing this in a more generic way that it could apply to other things too.
Yeah, sometimes that scares me. If it's more narrow in scope of application, I think it's easier to figure out how to implement it from a UI. If images can be attached to more arbitrary things, then I think that makes it a little more complicated.
Or did, well, I miss that? As someone who has implemented this, I know it's, yeah, we've had to implement it in our code. It would be a headache to do it this way, I think.
So are you talking about having it more in, rather than using an attachment format like this, having this, you know, more embedded more directly with the actual credential itself?
Yes. I'm saying it could be whether, let's say there's a data, whether it somehow could be somewhere between in the blue section that you've highlighted. Sorry, not that blue section, but a corresponding blue section in the offers attachment.
This one.
Oh, it can't go in the offers attachment.
Well, in the issue is.
Why can't it go in the offers attach?
So an attachment has a very fixed structure. There's no flexibility in it. That's why this is an array, for example. Chances are you're going to have an array of one for these images. But an attachment is a decorator that has an RFC and very specific rules around how you do it. You can't just add arbitrary fields to an attachment. That's part of the reason for using an attachment, I think. But certainly why we used it in offers, because it's
in the issued credential is of a specific type. So it's an indie credential, or it's a JSON-LD BBS plus credential.
Right.
It's fairly fixed, and we can't just shove data into that type, because
I can see taking this out of, you know, credential images attach and making it at the top level, so it's not using the attachment decorator, but I mean, I don't see a problem with using the attachment decorator as it's defined, but I would not want to see it in the offers attach anywhere associated with that.
Okay. So now, how again, are we going to correlate index by index if you have multiple elements in offers attach?
To me, this would always be it's an array, because the decorator, the attached decorator, requires an array. But the same image applies to, so when we talk about offers attach, it's an array, because not because you're issuing multiple credentials at the same time. We've explicitly said you can't do that. The offers attach is an array, A, because the attachment requires that, and B, because you might offer an indie version, a BBS plus version, and a JOT version of the same thing. So okay. I think the image would always be a singleton, it's an array, but I think it would always be a singleton.
Okay. I did not know that offer. Okay. That said, I agree. I didn't know that.
Okay.
Offers attach, could never be multiple credentials offers.
Right. Okay.
Not disparate ones. It could be different ones of the same type.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Right.
The same set of data, if you will.
Okay.
I think the singleton issue could be addressed in the.
Is that spelled out anywhere, that what you just said, Sam?
I believe it's in the spec.
I'm pretty sure it better be in the specs. But yeah, I'm happy to look, Keith.
I'll look.
Yeah, I'm looking too. But we did talk about that and explicitly said you can. So
okay. All right. Clears it up for me. Thank you.
The arrays are not to be used for issuing credentials with different claims. It is a line in the version 2 one, certainly. That's what I'm looking at right now. Okay. So there's a section in the version 2 about the attachments, and there is a line that says, yeah, you can't do that.
Okay. Thanks.
Cool.
Cool. Other comments? We've collected quite some notes, and George, I appreciate you adding them here as well. All right, we're done with this topic?
I think so.
All right, I'm going to hit comment. Okay, on our agenda, there's two places we could go here with the remaining 9 minutes. I guess three. One is we're at 9 minutes early. On deck is to talk about the areas that are a profile. I suspect that is a longer than 9 minute conversation. I do have two PRs that I've pulled out for the closing game. Should we attempt those instead?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
I would say yes.
Okay. So this is a PR that has already seen some review. That Daniel Hardman proposed, and George, Kyle, and Stephen have all been involved with this particular one. There's Kyle made some comments. We don't have Kyle here today. Kyle made some comments, but it seems he does a little bit of wondering here. Content, what's going on here? This is based on an issue, and so I think this is the only change where it talks about the signing attachments and clarifying the detached form of the JWS. There was a little bit of confusion over why we don't just use a non-detached one, and there's some clarification there. Any comments about this particular one? I think Kyle's comment is actually more to do with comments should be added elsewhere, not this particular modification.
I think it's relevant. I'm looking at the attachments RFC, and in the base 64 section, we are only referring to base 64, not base 64 URL.
So the relevant comment is, what should we say exactly here? It said, he's proposing that it says base64 URL encoded in base64. So we need to resolve that before we can, I think, merge this.
Yeah, I'm okay with base64 URL. And I think we should probably update the attachments RFC. I mean,
right. We just need to be consistent, I think, with what we do. And I think that's what Kyle's getting to.
Yeah.
Do we approve this one, or do we wrap that update also into this? Any opinions?
Would like us to reach consistency for sure. The thing is, we've already talked about base64 URL encoding several times, but apparently the text never made it in officially or in the
attachments RFC.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone want to do a global search on base64 and the
well, I think it's just attachments is what we're addressing at this point, since that's what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Because the attachments went to a JWS for signing them. And so this is just, I think this just specifies there. Unless the JWS rules already specify Base64 URL encoding. But in that case, it would make sense to be consistent with that, perhaps even if we're not signing it. And that would ease the consistency of it. Yes. So what's our action here? Are we chasing stuff down? Are we?
Well, the branch is out of date, so luckily for us, it still cannot be merged. So that buys us a little time.
Dang it. Unless I hit this update button.
Oh, well, you know, I've never used that feature. Anyway, I think, thanks to Kyle for pointing that out. I didn't really think too hard on this. I thought it was an easy PR, but now I see that we have a discrepancy here with the attachments RFC. So I'm in favor of resolving this inconsistency before pushing this PR in, Daniel's PR in.
I agree. So I noted that one. Okay, we have just a couple of minutes left. This is the next version of feature discovery, and this may be a slightly longer conversation. This came up in Daniel described this last time and then added after our comment, added some updates. And so I like this one a lot because we'd already imagined that feature discovery would do more than just protocols, and this actually makes that real. It does include a version bump so that there's still the version 1.0 and the version 2.0 actually describes it as this. One of the things that I was wondering about mechanically is that he doesn't preserve 1.0 in here and add a 2.0. He just replaces it.
No,
am I wrong about that?
I believe he just like put it aside in a separate file in that same PR. There's a file called v1.0.md.
Oh, so, and then he just refers to it?
In the status of v2, yes, in the supersedes header of the v2 top level thing, he does, yeah. The supersedes is a little bit like five lines. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay. Version 1.0 is what he actually keeps it as. And then here it is. Here's the version 1.0.
What status is 1.0 in? It's in accepted. I that's not how we agreed we would do these things. I mean,
did we talk about replacing it with a new RFC?
Always, because you can have both of them running at the same time. So as an implementer, you want to have both of them.
Well, this does preserve it, but the main document would then point to 2.0 instead of 1.0 for this RFC number, if we do it in this method. You can still get there. Still preserved it with the supersedes link. It should be easy to find.
Does that mean we take the issue and present and redo those back to 36 and 37? Because we did those differently.
We did do those differently.
Yep. Such fun.
It is fun. No, yeah. The mechanics turn out to be important here. Well,
I mean, our feeling has been that a new major version is essentially a new protocol. And the fact that it used to be version 1 and now it's version 2, well, that's okay because I can have both of them implemented and I'm likely to implement them in, you know,
So,
if you will, copy and paste and change, but two entirely different implementations.
Daniel's method here seems to work well if he was doing a minor version bump instead of a major version bump.
Exactly.
But a whole new RFC is probably cleaner given the fact that it's a major version bump because you know, deep semantics are changing.
I think so.
Structure is changing. Okay, I'll record that as a comment on here. But then I'd love to, get this merged in. I think it is an improvement, and we'll pave the way forward for things like governance frameworks, et cetera, that I think could be really useful.
Yep. No argument there.
Awesome. Okay, I'll make that comment. And with that, we're out of time. Thanks everyone for coming. Any final comments before we break for the week?
Good meeting. That went, got lots done, and that initial implementation on the BBS stuff was awesome. Thank you.
Totally awesome and useful information. Excellent. Thanks, folks, for coming. Appreciate you all being here, and we will see you around. Hope your week is a good one.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.